following message is from New Life Gillette Series Together. This week, Pastor Mike brings us part three of this series.
We are in a marriage series. We are talking about marriage and just kind of relationships in general. How do we relate to one another? In the first week of this series, we talked about how to have powerful marriages. It was kind of the foundation message of the series. And if you missed that one, I'd encourage you to go back and watch it on the app or on the website. Go watch week one of this series. The second week, we talked about play and sex and all the fun stuff that comes along with marriage. In the week three, today, we are talking about how to pause. When inevitable conflict happens, how do we pause? Because I don't know if you realize this, but men and women are different. In fact, you are different than everybody you try to relate with on a regular basis. We are different human beings, and to try to relate to each other requires us to get over some of those differences, and that's where we're going today. Let me say welcome to those of you who are watching online, to the guys over at the prison, and to those of you who are here in the room. Perhaps all of us can relate somewhat to this video.
On a reasonably even-tempered Sunday in February, two forces of nature meet to take on one of the biggest battles known inside these four walls. Few understand the heart of the game. This is a game of strategy, and the slightest slip-up could cost you everything. The stakes have never been higher. Tears have been shed, blood spilled. This effort has been poured over in sweat. Every time these two collide, you can feel the intensity, the ice-cold blood that runs through their veins. The battle is real, and the struggle is far from over. But there can only be one winner. The heat of the game will soon be over, the battle soon forgotten, and for these two, the winner may never be clear. But there will always be another Sunday.
And that is why Jen and Jed are getting a divorce. Just kidding, they're not getting a divorce. Are they in the room? I don't even know if they're in the room. Jed's on the camera. Oh, so yeah, there you go. So the reality is all of us come into relationship recognizing that there are going to be things that we're going to have to compromise on and we're not going to get everything we want. But even then, we come into relationships with expectations, certain things we are expecting to get out of the relationship. The problem is that nobody gets everything out of a relationship that they are expecting or wanting to get out of the relationship. And so what ends up happening is that there is a gap between your expectations and your actual experience. And you realize, okay, what I am experiencing in this relationship is not what I had hoped to or expected to experience in the relationship. And that is largely because people act in accordance to their expectations. So the fact that both people come into the relationship with different expectations means that people act differently. We act in accordance to our expectations. And so there was a junior college class of adults who were all taking a computer class. And sometime into the semester, the teacher of the class asked the class, "Do you think that we should refer to computers in the masculine or in the feminine form?" And in order to figure this out, he divided the classroom and he said, "Guys, you go on this side of the room, and ladies, you go on this side of the room, and decide, should we refer to computers as male or female?" And this is the conclusion that they came to. The men came to the conclusion and said, "We think computers should be referred to in the feminine form." And the professor asked why. They said, "Well, no one except their creator understands their internal logic." Number two, when computers communicate with each other, they speak in code language that only they can understand. Number three, every mistake you make is stored on their hard drive for later retrieval. Number four, as soon as you commit to one, then you have to spend all your money accessorizing it. But the women spoke up and said, oh no, computers should be referred to in the masculine form. And they said, here's why. Number one, in order to get their attention, you have to turn them on. Number two, they have a lot of data, but they still can't think for themselves. Number three, they're supposed to help you solve problems, but half the time they end up being the problem. And number three, as soon as you commit to one, you realized if you would have waited a little bit longer, they were releasing the better model. Men and women are different. We come into relationship with different expectations, and so we end up putting different things into relationship. You expected that he would be home from work at 5:15, but he was home from work at 6. You expected that she would enjoy golfing with you, but she thinks it's incredibly boring. You expected that she would be supportive, but you just feel like no matter what, you just can't be good enough. You expected that he would never cheat on you, but he's a child with no self-control. Or whatever led him to that. And what ends up happening in between the conflict or between the expectation and the experience is conflict. And this is what we're going to talk about today. So why are the expectations of husbands and wives so different? Because we are different. So I don't always drive my wife's car, but when I do, I put gas in it because somebody has to. We just have different strengths, different weaknesses, and we're just different. But the good thing is that our differences actually make us better. Our differences can make us a better team if in our differences we are united. Our differences make us stronger. But most of us look at our differences and we say that, well, this is better than this because they're different. One of them must be better, right? Well, the reality is that just because two things are different does not mean that one of the two things is better. G.K. Chesterton says, if I set the sun beside the moon, if I set the land beside the sea, if I set the town beside the country, if I set the man beside the woman, I suppose some fool would talk about one being better. Because we see different and we determine which is better. But it is our sinful nature that wants to say that one is better than the other or one is above the other. Even when we are different, we believe as Christians that we can be unified, we can be united. Because unity doesn't mean that you're the same. It means that you are together. We don't want to be the same, but we want to be together. Our differences can make our marriages stronger if we love each other enough to become united. Because love requires two people becoming one, right? That is what the imagery of marriage is. We are being united into one. Paul said, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, not being the same person, but having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Love gives us the same mind. As we are united into one person, metaphorically, then we have one mind. In other words, we're not the same person, but we're on the same mission. We are like-minded. We don't need to be the same because we are united in our goals, in our missions. We don't have to agree on the less important things because the main thing unites us. Paul also said, above all, clothe yourself with love, which binds us together. Love binds us all together in perfect harmony. It's not about getting the other person to be like you or to do things the way you prefer. It's about love. It's about being patient in your differences, allowing even for some of their faults. We clothe ourselves in love. Do you know what the difference is between being united and being untied? What's the difference? The difference between being united and untied is just one letter. The I is in a different place. As long as I am selfish, as long as I am all about me, then I am not united with anyone but myself. Mike Gladke says, I like me, who do you like? It's just this kind of common reality that we all have to come to terms with. We're supposed to love each other as ourselves because we just need to recognize we love ourselves, but we can invite somebody else into that relationship. Because when you married somebody, you invited somebody else into the me relationship, the I love me idea. You became part of me. When I marry her, she becomes me. And we move, it moves from me versus you to us versus the problem, or us versus our mission, or us versus our goal. So now we are united in our efforts. And the reality is that if this is the case, then conflict is only bad if we don't fight well, if we're not fighting against the right enemy. Conflict can actually be a good thing if we learn to attack our problems together. If we begin to see the conflict, even the conflict between us, as a problem that needs to be attacked by us, not us attacking each other. We must be united in our mission to attack conflict. Because healthy couples fight for resolution, not victory. How many of your arguments with your spouse usually just turn into who wins? Or you argue about something small, but then you end up arguing about what you said in your argument. This is so many of our arguments. We don't actually argue to figure out a problem or to attack a problem. Instead, we argue to figure out who won the argument. Conflict in a marriage doesn't mean that a marriage is unhealthy if the conflict is attacked in a united way. Conflict is going to happen, and it can be a sign in some circumstances that we're willing to fight for our marriage. We're willing to work on our marriage because we're attacking problems together. Les and Leslie Parrott say, conflict is the price we pay for deepening intimacy. It's going to happen. So in your conflict, learn how to fight together, not fight each other. It can be a sign that you're working on a marriage, that you're working through your issues. If you avoid conflict, that's actually sometimes a negative sign. If you just stay away from conflict altogether, that usually is a sign that you are distancing yourself from each other. We don't want that. We don't want to distance. We want to fight together. But when we have conflict, we have to have what Paul calls the same mind. A united mission, not the same people, not the same personalities, not the same habits, but the same mind. Be of like mind. If you are united in your mission, then conflict can help us further that mission. But even when we're united in mission, there are times that we will get caught up in an argument. We've decided we're united in our mission, and we're going to work together. We're going to figure this all out. But even then, sometimes emotions get the best of us, and we start to fight against each other. And so today, I want to talk about a tool that we can use to help us through those times. And it's called the pause process. I didn't write this. I stole it from an article that I read on a Christian website that I thought was good. But I wanted to share it with you today. And I'd encourage you, if you have an issue with this, this may be a time to take notes. Just write these down. You don't got to memorize anything, but just write down these five steps of the pause process. When you fight and you need to refocus yourself on what unites you, the pause process can help you reunite. So, number one, prepare. This is a lot of prayer. Before you even start talking to each other, pray. And ask God to examine your heart to see that you truly do want to fight together, that you truly do have good motives in the fight that is about to ensue. Pause for a minute and prepare to attack the problem together. And you pray for yourself, and you pray for your spouse, and you're not praying that God will fix your spouse. You're not praying that your spouse will do your way or see it your way. You are praying for the conversation. Luke 5:16 says, Jesus often withdrew to the wilderness for prayer. Now, why would Jesus do this? I think it's partially because Jesus recognized that he was going to experience a lot of conflict in his life. That maybe Jesus, in his preparation out in the wilderness, realized he needed to pause and take a step back and prepare himself even emotionally. Did you know Jesus had emotions? He did. I'm sure he felt anger. In fact, we're pretty positive of that. And Jesus was preparing himself for these encounters. And so we can take instructions from watching the way Jesus carried himself through these conflicts. So pray for yourself and pray for your spouse. Number two, affirm the relationship. Put the conversation into perspective. And this is when you start talking. At the beginning of the conversation, just say something like, babe, I love you no matter what. Babe's what we say. I don't know what you say to your spouse. Don't take that one from me at the trademark. Just so you know, I love you no matter what. Before we get into this, let's not let this come between us. We are bigger than this. This is something we need to figure out. Because you're about to start a conversation. You're about to communicate with a member of the opposite sex. And communication between a man and a woman is hard, period. Sarah and Kale, Sarah's our youth pastor here at the church, they were over at our house for dinner a while back, and we somehow got on the conversation of middle names. And Sarah asked me what my middle name is, and I said, well, guess. I said, it starts with an L. And she says, okay, Lincoln. I was like, good guess, no. She said, Luke. I said, no, it's more rare. And she said, what? I said, it's more rare. She said, is that Italian? I said, is what Italian? Morer. Michael Morer Wilson? No, I was like, it's more rare than Luke. More space rare than Luke. My middle name is Lawrence, by the way. It's not super rare. This is why in relationships we value patience over accuracy. There are so many times in our relationships that we get into fights because she said something that wasn't exactly correct. You said, I always do this, and I don't always do this, because remember that one time that I didn't do that, and then we end up arguing about the specifics. Or she's telling a story, and you talk about how it was on a Wednesday, and it was blah, 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 and you're like, no, it was a Tuesday, and then we have no idea what the conversation's about because we're arguing the details. We want accuracy. There's a lot of us that are kind of black and white people. We're high justice people, and we need accuracy. So conversations often devolve into just arguments about stuff that nobody cares less about. Let me just tell you, if you are out to dinner with another couple and you guys start arguing about whether it was over a Tuesday or on a Wednesday, you've lost everybody. Nobody cares about the details of your story. You could make up all the details and just get to the point, and the story's much better. About half of the things I tell you on Sunday morning, it's true. No, I'm just kidding. But it's okay to not get the day of the week or the small details right. And in your conversations, don't let them devolve into the issue of just fighting over details. Nobody cares. Move on. And then number three, understand opinions. Our opinions are motivated by our desires. They're motivated by our needs and our limitations and our fears. So in our conversations, this is the time when we dig deeper to figure out, why do you feel the way you feel? So you start with, let's not let this come between us. I love you no matter what, but can you help me understand why you think that? Can you help me understand why you said what you said? Why don't you want to go to my parents' house for Christmas? What? Okay, so you said, you don't want to go to my house for Christmas. Can you explain why? Well, I feel like if I go out of town, I'll fall behind on my work. I feel like I need to stay in town. Okay, I can understand that. Why do you want to spend $300 on our son's birthday party? I'm talking about some personal issues here. Because I want to make sure that our son knows that we love him. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. We at least know the motivations. Why are you so rude to me right when we get home from work? Well, because I have to be kind and pretend like I like everybody at work all day long. So when I get home, I'm just tired of it. Why don't you have supper ready before 7 p.m.? Why don't you have supper ready when I get home from work? Well, I'm just trying to survive all day. I'm at home with these kids, and I'm trying to keep them from destroying stuff, and I'm trying to keep them from killing each other, and I'm just trying to survive. So the idea of making food somewhere just doesn't work. Okay, we're getting somewhere. We're figuring out the deeper issue. Jesus' brother James says, "You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. So make it a point to listen and know why your spouse is frustrated or what your spouse is looking to get out of this conversation. Then, when you know that, then you can start to search for creative solutions. After you've affirmed and then you understand, then you start brainstorming. And there are almost always more than two options in an argument, right? I mean, it usually turns into this option versus this option, but usually there's a middle ground, or usually there is a third option altogether. If you work hard, or if you pretend all day like you like people, and then what if you turned off the radio on your way home and you took that as a time to rest? You got a long drive on the way home. Or what if we ate out less often so we could relax more at home? Or is there another way other than spending so much money that we could make our son feel loved? Or should I wait to ask you how your day went when you get home from work? Should I let some time pass? Okay, if you're having a hard time at home with the kids, is there something that we can do to get you some help? Or should we eat out more often? Let's brainstorm some options here to help with the core issue of the problem. Then after you've brainstormed your options, you evaluate those options. And we should be able, adults, to compromise. Which of these can we both live with? Mature adults have learned to give a little. Now babies and politicians have a hard time with this one. This is why babies so early in life, my son right now, like the only word he can say is mine. And it takes so long to learn share. This is a maturing issue. This is why in week one we said only adults should get married. We're assuming some maturing has happened. And maturity compromises. And there are many different ways that we can compromise. So before we end, I just want to give you a few ways that you can compromise. Number one, accommodate. If he's good at tracking expenses and you're not, then he should do the tracking of the expenses. I'm just going to accommodate that weakness. Or if she's not good at cooking and you are, then do the cooking. If she's a vegetarian, then maybe you should eat more vegetables. And that one's hard because God told Noah to save the meat, not the vegetables. The second option is to accept. There are some little annoyances that it's just time to get over it. So he chews loud with his food when he chews his food. What? Who cares? So he doesn't make the bed in the morning. Let's just deal with a messed up bed. Is it really worth divorcing him? So she watches the TV too loud. Can we possibly just get over this one? Let's pick our battles and let's realize that we're not going to win them all and we shouldn't even fight them all. Pick your battles, get over some stuff. Don't just fight because you can. The third way is just to adjust. Maybe you're a morning person and she's a nighttime person, so you compromise and you go to bed a little bit later and she goes to bed a little bit earlier. We meet in the middle. What area can you just meet in the middle? I'm not going to get all of what I want and you're not going to get all of what you want. Let's just meet in the middle. But the goal in all three of these options is to change yourself. This is your focus, not your spouse. Because most people enter into a compromise situation hoping that they're not going to compromise at all. Their goal is to change their spouse. Now, I'm going to pretend like I'm meeting in the middle, so I'm going to start way back here, even though I don't want to go way back here, so that we can meet in the middle and I actually get what I wanted. This is the Donald Trump way of compromising. This is not how you should compromise, right? And it's brilliant. He wrote it into his book. If you want to get your way, then start farther back. Start farther away. But this isn't our goal, right? Our goal isn't to get our way. Our goal is to find a middle ground that we can both be happy with. Because sacrificial love requires us to attack problems together. Because you know how your spouse treats you now. But you don't know how your spouse would treat you if you were a different person. If you changed. If you treated her differently. If you were more kind. Or fill in the blank. You know how she treats you now, and it drives you crazy. Maybe she would treat you differently if you changed. So back to that passage we talked about earlier, Philippians 2 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition. Nothing. Do nothing out of vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. So fight with your spouse and fight for your spouse. You're on the same team, but you're also each other's greatest cheerleader. You're also the one hoping that they will win. You're also the one hoping that they will succeed. No, your spouse is not perfect, but neither are you. So if you both choose to change, if you both choose to grow and sacrifice for the other, you will see a beautiful marriage. So pause and fight for your relationship. Pause and fight for resolution. Resolution is the goal here. That's the mission. Fight for resolution to conflict together. And no one's going to leave here today thinking, mind blown. Are you kidding? We can compromise? Nobody heard anything today that you haven't heard before. Nobody heard anything today that you didn't already know. But what we realize when we've done relationship for a while, is sometimes actually putting into practice the things that we already know is the hardest part of all. Because emotions happen, life happens, hard times happen. Sometimes we want to fight just to release some anger or release some frustration, and so we're not even getting to these five steps because I'm just fighting for the wrong reason altogether. And so whether or not you learned anything today is not the point. It's whether or not from here on out you're going to decide, I am going to do what I can to end the cycle of fighting, of conflict, of anger, of frustration, of disagreement, of separation. We're going to do better. We're going to move forward together. And it usually starts with a conversation, a humble conversation in which you come together and you say, listen, we've been fighting a lot. Can we talk? Let's choose to fight better. Let's choose to fight fair. Let's choose to fight on the same team and not let our emotions control our actions and not let emotions control our words. The other day, Lincoln got in trouble for hitting Titus, which is what he gets in trouble for all the time right now. And I told Lincoln, I said, why are you always hitting Titus? Here's a word-for-word quote of what he said. I don't want to hit Titus, but my body tells me to. I'm not making that up. And a four-year-old has now understood the human condition. I don't want to do it, but I keep doing it. I want to give it up, but I can't give it up. Why? Because this is the reality of our fallen nature. This is the reality of our emotions. This is the reality of our temptations. We want to do what is right, but just like Lincoln was experiencing, there's something inside of us that's pushing us to do it the wrong way. Usually it's an emotion. And what Lincoln doesn't realize is he was actually quoting the Apostle Paul. He says, I do not understand what I do, for For what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. I just can't stop it. My emotions take over, and my desires take over, and I don't want to fight against my wife, but I have this overwhelming desire to be right. I don't want to get angry, but he's so annoying sometimes. Have you seen how he doesn't pick up after himself, or he's always nagging or whatever? I don't want to criticize him. I don't want to nag him, but then everything's happening and the kids are screaming. And so there's multiple ways that you can address this issue, but here's the reality. You are never going to be without emotion. It is not our goal to remove emotion from you. It is our goal, like we talked about in the first week of this series, to do the hard work of preparing ahead of time of how to deal with the emotions when they hit. So when the emotions come, we have a plan. We pause. We step away. This is what we do with Lincoln all the time right now. We're trying the maturing process. Lincoln gets mad, and he does this like he's so mad his head is shaking a little bit. And you can see what's coming. And what do we say with Lincoln? With Lincoln, it's, Lincoln, take a deep breath. Lincoln, take a step back. Lincoln, pause. Just rest. Right now, he's in a phase where he likes to chase bugs. And you can tell how we parent, because whenever he sees a bug on the ground, he'll go, patience, patience, patience. Take a deep breath. Step back. Pause. And so if we can allow ourselves to do that in our relationships, I guarantee you, as you go into a conversation, if you've prayed about it ahead of time, you are so much more likely to attack the problem instead of attacking your spouse. And you're not always going to get it right, but you'll do better. And we'll do better together, changing ourselves. God, I thank you for how you are so constantly working in our lives to help us look a little bit more like you. God, I pray that you would make us moldable clay so that in us, in our lives, you can build a firm foundation that when storms hit, when COVID-19 hits, when homeschooling hits and all of that stuff, that we are able to stand firm because we stand on the solid truth that we read in your word of how best to treat each other, about how best to live in harmony with each other. Help us to look more like you. We love you and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to New Life Gillette. For more information, visit us on the web at www.newlifegillette.com. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And always remember, Jesus loves you very much, and he died to give you new life.